Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive.
Hi there, Caitlin from the future here with a quick disclaimer. Unfortunately, my audio for this episode is a little scuffed. It's totally my fault. I didn't realize that the studio we were recording in was using my webcam mic as opposed to my real one. And we are very grateful to a friend of ours for working absolute miracles and improving it drastically, but it's still noticeable. So that's why I wanted to put this in here. There's only so much you can do with webcam audio. So yeah, sorry about that. My bad. But I do hope you still can enjoy the episode.
Hey, friends, we're back. It's, you know, it's almost like we come back every week. It's crazy how that happens.
I watched two movies this week trying to get a movie for a podcast episode. Because whenever I have like the time in my schedule to like kind of be okay with watching a movie and it not working,
Right.
You know, I had the time to do that and like watch some more experimental, like I'm not sure type of movies. And both of them were not it for the podcast.
Yeah, right, right, right. That does happen quite a bit.
Yeah. So the movies I watched, both from the 60s, I wanted to venture back. And one of them was called Straight Jacket from 1964. And it is with Joan Crawford, which is just like a big old Hollywood name that I know, but I haven't actually seen her in anything except this.
Gotcha.
It says, after a 20-year stay at an asylum for a double murder, a mother returns to her estranged daughter where suspicions arise about her behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, are you going to – I figure you're never going to watch this movie. Can I tell
you? Probably not. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, guys. Unless you want – you don't want spoilers for Straight Jacket 1964, keep listening. Basically, kind of – I thought it had a lot of inspiration from Psycho because there was this big twist at the end where like the daughter was actually the killer, framing her mom as the killer.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like a fun twist, but also it was like not enough there for me to be interested enough to tell the story to you.
Right.
Then I watched The Birds.
Yes,
from 1963, another Alfred Hitchcock, and it was a good movie. Like, I did enjoy it, but it also just wouldn't have worked as a podcast episode. It was very, very heavy on like character drama.
Oh, really?
And then every once in a while, some birds would pop up.
Gotcha.
But did you watch VHS 2?
I did watch VHS 2. I finally got around to that one, which there is, I think, what people consider to be one of the best segments in that, in the second movie. It's called Safe Haven. Have you seen that movie, VHS 2? No.
No, I don't. I think I've only seen your reactions to VHS movies rather than ever watching them for myself.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. You know, I'm surprised you haven't watched them considering they're essentially a bunch of found footage clips.
Yeah, I'm like, I've never been a fan of anthology movies. That's
fair,
all.
Fair.
I think I watched one once. Actually, that is I accidentally watched the craziest anthology movie with my cousin once as a teenager.
Oh.
It was horror. And one of the segments scarred me for life.
Oh.
I should try to find what that was and let you know.
It wasn't ABCs of Death, was it?
Is there a segment that you've ever seen involving a woman with body image issues and a chainsaw?
No.
So probably not that one.
Well, it could be. I didn't watch that whole thing. But I just know that that's like a really messed up one. We put that on when I was in college one time.
Oh, okay.
I don't think
so maybe it was a segment in it. Because that does sound a little familiar, but I don't know if it's just because I just see so many movie titles every day. I'm like on Letterboxd.
Yeah. I watched a movie besides VHS 2, which is, you know, fun anthology experience. I was just kind of looking through Shudder stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across a movie. I'd be curious to know if you've seen it or heard of it. It is called The Coffee Table and is a Spanish film.
I have not, but I saw that you logged this and I clocked that and I was like, what is that? And I'm curious because I don't even remember. Honestly, I'm going to be honest. I looked at it because I saw that you logged it on Letterboxd. Like, what's this? And I read the synopsis and I was like, that sounds weird and interesting. And then it was in one ear out the other. I don't even remember what that synopsis said.
I'm pretty sure the synopsis is something as simple as a couple buys a coffee table that will change the course of their life.
Well, that's probably why I was like, weird.
Yeah, exactly.
thoughts ended there.
And I went into this movie being like, what kind of weird shit are they about to pull on me? But it didn't end up being. It's still a little weird and it's definitely low budget and like all of that. But like it ended up being one of the most uncomfortable, disturbing experiences that I've had watching a horror film.
And in a good way or a bad way? Like sometimes it is too far, but it's very rare.
I don't think it went too far, but it's I think it gets close. But it's like it's more just the idea of what's happening than like actually seeing anything. It's not that you're seeing things. It's just the emotions that you're experiencing while watching the movie are just so like just heavy. It's like, it's a while. I do recommend you watch it if you haven't.
Okay.
I was really surprised that it was as good as it was to me anyway.
That's like the best feeling, finding a hidden gem.
Yeah. And it really was, especially because like, you know, I usually shy away from movies that I have to put captions on for just because I had to rewind so many times while watching this movie. Because I was like, I just missed what they just said and I got to go back because I look at my phone for 2 seconds. I get distracted. But yeah, if anyone hasn't seen that one, I recommend it.
What year was is it newer?
I think it was I think it was either the teens or 20s. So like it's fairly recent. Yeah. But yeah, no, the interesting thing is actually when I went to watch the movie we're going to talk about today, Dangerous Animals, I was kind of upset because you know how there's like a bunch of it's from this studio and this studio and this studio, like as you're getting into the movie. One of them was Shudder, but it's not on Shudder. You know, it's like Clown in the Cornfield.
Yes.
Where it's probably going to get there eventually. So I did have to like pay $20 for this movie, even though I have Shudder.
Ugh.
You know?
I'm always interested in like, those are the movies that interest me the most when they make it higher up on Letterboxd, but they're not available for streaming yet. I'm always like, okay, it must be, there must be something about it.
Dangerous Animals is a movie directed by Sean Byrne, who I looked at his credits and he had like 3 total. And this was one of them. And I didn't know the other two. Written by Nick Leopard, who I couldn't even click on his name on Wikipedia because he doesn't have a page. You know, we're at that kind of level. It was a joint project between the US and Australia that premiered at the 2025 Cannes Film Festival. So,
of course,
if you didn't know, yes, this is a 2025 film. And yeah, that's like all I have information wise because there's really not too much. So here we go.
We're ready.
We open up on a shot of a boat. It's a decent sized work boat. So it's like, you know, like all metal. It's rusting. It's orange and yellow in color. And a man and a woman walk down the dock toward the ship. And when they get a little closer, we can see that a very faded Tucker's Experience is imprinted on the side of the boat with a shark logo. And the shark is in between the words Tucker and Experience. So it kind of is giving like Tucker's Shark Experience, you know?
Okay.
And again, this boat's, you know, it's been through it. It's very rusted, very faded. And this couple walks up and he's like, looks pretty dead because there's nobody around. And the woman asks if, you know, maybe we should just, should we go ahead and get out of here? But then they hear the voice of an Australian man come from off screen. Didn't book, eh? He asks. The couple looks over to see the source of the voice sitting on another smaller nearby boat. This man's giving very heavy fisherman vibes, like he's kind of rough around the edges, probably could use a shower, kind of energy.
Yeah.
And this new man tells the couple that he wouldn't recommend going out on this ship, especially not you, he says as he points to the man. Of course, this guy's like, why is that? And the fisherman fella explains, last group he took out, there was a young fella looked like you. He was taking a piss off the side of the boat and a bull shark jumped up, bit his dick off.
Oh my
god. Yeah, no, exactly. But the girls kind of giggles at this little likely untrue anecdote. The fisherman goes on to say that Tucker starts his holiday today, so they're unlikely to have any luck going out with him. Just as he says this, who but good old Tucker pulls up in his truck. Tuck, as he is somewhat sometimes referred to in this film, gets out of the truck, grabs a couple buckets from the back, and makes his way up the dock in a hurry. A little pupper barks at him. He's seems to be the fisherman's little pup. And Tucker's just like, Milo, shut up. Just like gives him a stare down. It's like, oh, friendly, super friendly.
Yeah.
Tucker sees this unfamiliar couple and makes his way over to them, introducing himself. And this is when we learn that these people are Greg and Heather. And they are actually not a couple.
Oh.
After establishing that Heather is from England and Greg is from Canada, Tucker asks, where are you two lovebirds staying? Heather laughs and says they're not together. They're just staying up at the hostel. Greg apologizes for not booking ahead of time. They were supposed to go to SeaWorld with some friends, but they slept in, so here they are. And then Tucker, in the most sus way possible, is like, huh, So I guess no one is looking for you guys, you know, no one knows that you're here, right? And like Heather's like kind of uncomfortable and she's like, why? And Tucker goes, well, just want to make sure your last will and testament's in order. And Heather's face falls, but Tuck continues with a cheeky grin. We will be swimming with sharks after all. And Heather's like, ha ha, oh, so funny, sir.
I mean, okay, so I wouldn't be here in the first place. Like,
right.
I'm not a swimming with sharks girly. The life is not for me. But I fear that would be enough for me to be like, yeah, I'm going to find somewhere else.
Yes. Yes. I think this would give me weird energy. Like, he clearly feels like a hard guy to read, like very sarcastic and like makes a lot of jokes. But still, if he says that to me at all, I'm like,
yeah,
that's weird.
No, yeah. If I'm going to do a shark diving experience, I need the company to be like multiple people, extremely professional, like don't have a personality. I don't want to know that you're a human that can make mistakes. Like, I just need you to get me through this. So, yeah, no. Yikes. Mm-hmm.
Next thing we know, boat's heading out. And we cut to a wall of frame newspaper articles. And the most prominent one's headline reads, I beat Jaws, with a picture of a young boy underneath it. Now, I feel like this is a good time for me to say I've actually never seen Jaws, which feels wrong. But like, I feel like this is probably my first shark movie.
Oh.
Which feels not right.
I fear my first shark movie was Sharknado, so you're doing better than me. But I have seen Jaws. I have seen Jaws. It's actually, it was better than I expected. I mean, I should have expected it to be good because it's Jaws, but
yeah,
it lives up. It does live up.
So we hear the voice of Tucker as he begins to tell us a story. So I'm 7 years old. I'm out there on my boogie board, splashing away. And I guess from underneath, I must have looked like a seal. And then boom, this bloody white gets me. He laughs as Heather looks truly uncomfortable, asking, it just let you go? Mm. He's like, yeah, you're looking at a genuine walking, talking miracle. Greg asks Tucker if it hurt, and he says, it didn't tickle, as he lifts up the back of his shirt to reveal some nasty scarring appearing to be from the jaws of a shark.
Oh my God, he's being for real? I thought he was like,
oh yeah,
he was just joking around, just joshing.
What's interesting is like, that is, like I just said too, his character. It's like,
right.
Are you serious? But he has the scars to prove it.
That's wild. Okay.
So it didn't hurt, but he says, it woke me up though. I've been wide awake ever since, which I honestly think is kind of a cool line because it comes back to like people who have near-death experiences.
Yes.
Like, just changes every ounce of your perspective on
life. You just appreciate everything more. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. Heather's like, well, wasn't somebody watching you? You know, you said you were just a kid. And he's like, well, let's just say I used to spend a lot of time on my own.
Oh.
I know. She's like, oh, poor kid.
Yeah.
Heather responds by saying she can't believe that he chose to do this for a living. You know, had it been her, she would never go near the water again.
Was thinking that, yeah.
Right. But Tucker's like, well, it's not the shark's fault, you know? And he's, you know, kind of right.
Mm-hmm.
It's animals just do what they do in their environments, and humans interfere with those environments. So he's not entirely wrong.
Okay.
But I still think the fear would live on.
Right. But as Heather, this conversation might make me a little bit more comfortable, honestly.
Mm.
Like, him opening up like this and talking this way, I don't know. He does seem to like understand animals, so maybe he can keep us safe and this will not be a horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's going to happen, obviously.
Yeah.
I will say, these two characters, Heather and Greg, they very much like, I don't want to be disrespectful, but dear God, they don't seem very bright. They just seem a little bit naive to literally everything. Like, they're just, you know, they don't seem like the brightest characters. They're not stupid.
Like pushovers? Like, they just let things happen and because they're like too scared to stand up for themselves, or are they literally just like not connecting things?
Just clueless.
Oh, but
they're just very clueless.
This should be fun.
Yeah. So we cut to a shot of Tucker dumping some red goop into the ocean. It's clearly like blood and guts, you know, where the shark's over. And Greg kneels on the floor with Heather, who's looking real nervous about this upcoming experience. He manages to calm her down, and they walk over to the edge of the boat, and Heather's like, I can't believe you've talked me into this. A shark then swims by, its fin appearing through the surface of the water, very cartoon-like, and Heather jumps back, like screaming, like just at the sight of the shark. And Tucker's excited. He's like, oh, it's a Mako. It's the cheetah of the sea. And he's like really into what yeah. these sharks are. Heather's adamant that she can't go through with this. And Tucker's like, well, not yet you can. He's going to guide them through an ancient relaxation practice to help calm them down before going into the ocean. He tells them to hold hands, close their eyes, and breathe deeply. Things get quiet and tense before Tucker begins the practice.
Why are you laughing?
Baby shark baby shark
This is a joke. This is a bit.
Yes.
This is a joke. Because I honestly, like, I don't know what kind of movie this is. Like, you could tell me that they just sang Baby Shark together and I would have to believe you. Like,
oh, they did, though. The bit comes from, it's Tucker's bit.
Wait, he really did it.
He really sang
I thought this
song.
Was your bit, not
no,
his bit.
No, this is Tucker's bit. But he laughs, and then the three of them laugh and dance as they continue to sing the shark song on the back of the boat.
Oh, not laugh and dance and sing Baby Shark. This is yeah, wow.
It's
kind of, this type. Okay, I'm like wrapping my head around what kind of movie this is, and that I mean, just slotted something into place for me.
It is like, it's kind of just like Tucker is just an interesting fella.
Yes,
like, he's
clearly.
He's just got a very interesting personality.
Yeah.
And I apologize to anybody who's going to have that song stuck in their head for the rest of the day.
I know.
But it does make an appearance. So the next thing that we see is Tucker slamming the top of the cage shut on Greg and Heather before he prepares to let them down into the water. Under the surface, the two are breathing with scuba gear, of course, and Heather looks low-key horrified as we spot at least 15 to 20 sharks surrounding the cage.
Mm.
We get some close-up shots of sharks like swimming straight up to the camera, like these slow-motion shots of like the teeth,
yeah.
And Heather's very much panicking, but...
Yeah, but why are you here?
I want to get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Greg holds out his arm to her and successfully calms her down as the music actually gets kind of pretty and the two of them admire the sharks as they peacefully, mm-hmm. like, are swimming around the cage. Like, she has her panic moment, but then, like, she realizes she's safe and she's able to, like, relax.
Okay.
You would not do this.
Nah. I'm not really someone that, like, likes the water that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I went to Punta Cana this past year, and I went in the ocean a couple times, like, just, like, hung out on the waves because, like, you got to do it and it's fun.
Yeah.
But then I was ready to get out. Like, you know, some of my family went on, like, I think they saw shark. I think they did this.
Really?
I don't know if they saw actual sharks, but they did something like this. And... No, it's just, like, not my idea of fun. Like, being on a boat, I don't like that. Like, I just don't like boats even, so.
Fair.
And then you just want me to go in a cage. Like, I'm not a fan of, like, cages. And then I'm not a fan of, like, honestly, if there was a safer way, I don't know. If somehow I could, like, see sharks without it being a boats and cage situation, I maybe would be open to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the whole experience and what you have to do. It's like, I just, no, not for me.
Fair. And I think that's kind of interesting that you're looking at it from a very similar perspective as me. I would love to experience that and see sharks, but I have mm-hmm. a fear of being underwater. So, like, it's more the water that I would be afraid of than the actual sharks themselves.
Yes.
Because in the cage, I'm like, yeah, like, realistically, that should be safe.
Yeah.
You know? But it's the being underwater with scuba gear that I'm like, I don't know if I could handle
that. Because, yeah, I wouldn't say, like, I'm afraid of sharks, really.
Right.
I don't love the idea of, like, humans going into a creature's habitat.
Mm.
Well, I mean, we shouldn't let's not get into, like, zoos and stuff. But I don't know. It's just, like, I'm kind of like a just let them be type of person. Yeah. I my sister loves sharks so much. So, like, and
oh,
she's
really?
Like, no, they're, yeah, my sister, shout out Grace. She's, like, knows all the different types of sharks and, like, random facts about sharks. Like, she's just a shark girl.
She's shark girly.
And she's made me not afraid of sharks.
Yeah.
But, yeah, still, like, the experience, like, I don't trust, like, the people running the experience. It's, like, the same thing.
Fair.
It's, like, the same reason I'm afraid of planes. It's because I have to put, like, my safety in someone else's control.
Yep.
And that's more where I wouldn't be doing something like this.
That's so fair. Yeah. Because I don't want to go too far off track right now. But I hear a lot about how sharks are actually, like, very calm creatures. And the only reason they have ever attacked humans is because humans have, like, instigated it. You know, like, that's
exactly.
not It's not that sharks are chasing after humans. That's not what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, Tucker reels the cage back up and lets Heather and Greg out, who are laughing, like, just in excitement, like they can't believe what they just experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And Tucker's like, yeah, something to tell the grandkitties one day. And he helps Greg out of the cage. Greg says, man, thanks so much for fitting us in. He wasn't quite done speaking, but he won't get the chance to fully finish his thought.
Okay.
Because Tucker has whipped out a knife and is now stabbing Greg repeatedly in the throat.
Wait. Wait, because I've read the synopsis and I knew there was like going to be a bad human involved. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't remember the synopsis clearly enough to know how that was going to happen, but I remembered that. Not for a second did I think it was going to be Tucker. Like, I know he's the creepy one in a way, like out of all of these quote normal people, but I thought because he came off so strangely, I was like, oh, he's got to be chill for sure. But no, okay.
Yeah, it's him. I think the only reason I knew was because I'd seen a picture of him in relation to the movie. And so I was like, this has got to be the guy.
Damn.
So yeah.
That's interesting. Sometimes these days, sometimes when a movie doesn't subvert your expectations, that is subverting your expectations.
Right. No, you're so real.
Yeah.
So Greg is grabbing at his throat, but he's, you know, he's gone. Tucker gives him a little shove and he falls backwards into the ocean.
Oh, man.
Tucker turns to Heather now with a smirk saying, welcome aboard. Heather understandably screams as the dangerous animals title card slaps us in the face, and we are officially in this movie.
Okay.
So that's just your opening sequence. Now, we are not going to drive in a car right now, which, shocking, I know. We are going to get a little bit of an opening title credit sequence. We got some fun, upbeat music. We see like a nice arch / gate that says Surfer's Paradise in front of a beach. And we see beautiful shots of the Australian coast, people enjoying themselves on the beach. But we spend a lot of time watching one very specific girl who's out surfing on the ocean before she uses the standing beach shower and heads on out. She ends up at a gas station convenience store. And she's standing in line at the counter sipping her XXL Slurpee while the man in front of her asks if they have any jumper cables. The cashier tells them that if they're not back there on the shelf, unfortunately, they must be out at the moment. The young, very conventionally attractive male turns to our protagonist, a very young, conventionally attractive female, and asks her if she has jumper cables. And she's like, sorry, I don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
So he leaves, and our girly pop, she walks up, she puts a couple bags of rolls on the counter and her Slurpee to check out.
Real.
Yeah. Once she leaves the store, she heads around back to the dumpster where she takes the cover off her Slurpee and begins to pour the contents out into the dumpster.
Oh.
Out into her palm falls a pint of ice cream that she clearly snuck out of the store by putting it in the Slurpee cup so that she bought it for like a buck instead of five.
Man, for a couple of bucks, what's going on?
Yeah, I know, right? For a couple of bucks is crazy.
Yeah.
So the upbeat song's been continuing to play through this whole sequence, but it suddenly cuts out when she's jump-scared by a man.
Me every day.
Girl, you're telling me. So it's not really a jump scare, but the man from inside's back, and our girlie is like, I told you, I can't help you. What do you want? Like, what's going on? He's like, you really don't have jumper cables driving this thing? As he points to her old beat-up blue van that she's driving. She stands her ground and is like, yeah, no, I don't have anything. And she goes to get into her car. But this dude's like, well, I think the cashier inside would love to see the security footage from behind the building.
Oh, my God. Like, what? If she ends up having jumper cables, okay, fine. He read her. But, like, sometimes we're just a girl. And sometimes when you're just a girl, you don't have jumper cables. I personally – do you keep jumper cables in your car?
I don't.
I don't either. I should. Everyone should, I guess.
You really should, but yeah, I don't have them either. At least not to my knowledge, unless they're like shoved somewhere that I'm unaware of. Because who knows?
Right.
Who knows? But no, like our girl has this reaction. She looks at him like, you're absolutely joking right now. Like there's no way you're playing me like this. He's like, please just bring me in my car. I've walked 10 blocks. I can't find jumper cables anywhere. And she looks so annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But our dude's like, I'm not a serial killer, I promise.
Oh, well then it's fine.
Yeah.
No.
That would make me more mad if you said that.
Yeah.
That would actually make me more upset.
If someone said that to you, does that make them more creepy to you, or do you believe them? You
more
know what
creepy.
I mean?
More creepy.
More creepy. Yeah, 100%. Because it's like, why do you think I was even thinking in that way?
Right.
You know?
It's like, I definitely was thinking that way, but like—
Which I was, yes.
Why do you think I was thinking that way? Like, I don't—
Exactly.
Why do you feel the need to point that out to me?
No. Yeah.
More creepy.
Yeah.
But more upbeat, fun music kicks in as we cut to the awkward silence that is the two of them riding in the van together.
Oh my God.
This guy looks like he keeps like wanting to say something, but then hold him back. And our girl looks totally content with the silence. He eventually decides to break the silence, asking her, "Aisle or window?" She doesn't reply. She's uninterested. So he continues. I have this theory that aisle people are more open and friendly, whereas window people are more private and thoughtful. Wow, sir. What a crazy leap you made. Genius theory that you just came up with.
He should go into like philosophy.
I know. He might really make it.
Yeah.
He really might make it. He continues to be like, I'm getting major window vibes. And he like chuckles to himself like he thinks he's so funny. Which, by the way, I am a window person. And yes, I don't like to talk to people.
And I hate when people who do like to talk have to point that out about people who don't. Like, it's one of my biggest pet peeves is people being like, ooh, because I was, especially in high school, like I've gotten more like comfortable with myself and social and whatever as I've gotten older and older. But in high school, I was like much quieter. And when you have those couple moments with like the loud people being like, oh my gosh, you speak. You know?
Oh my God.
I fucking hate that. I hate that. Like, that's like, okay, oh my God, you don't shut up. Like, hello. Like, what do you want me to say to that?
Should I say that back to you? I'm sure you'd love that. Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, he's giving this energy. He's not, you know what? If he dies, he's already down that route. Like, if he dies, I'm not going to be sad for you, sir.
Fair enough. So, our girly, much like us, is just, she's not having it. And she snaps at him and is like, is this a Mormon thing? And he's like, what? And she goes, dude, you look like you stepped out of the Book of Mormon. And he is wearing black pants, a white button down, and a black tie.
Oh,
so
okay.
She's not wrong at all. And he laughs, recognizing that there is truth in this, but clarifies that no, he's in real estate. Selling apartments, not eternal salvation, he says with a chuckle.
Mm.
And she goes, can you shut the fuck up? And he goes, yep. Then it's honestly great. It's very satisfying. she's done. She's had enough of this man.
This is a fun dynamic.
It's great. So they do finally reach his Volvo hatchback. And she's like, nice wheels. And he tells us that the car was his mom's. He got a good deal on it. Mm-hmm. And Girlie sees a surfboard in the back and asks if that's his mom's too. Now that she knows he surfs, her whole demeanor kind of shifts a little bit.
Yeah.
And she's interested in chatting about surfing, which, you know, they're doing. They're hooking up the jumper cables, chatting about surfing. And yes, she had the dropper cables in her car.
Oh my goodness. I can't judge her. I don't know. When a stranger comes up to you asking for anything, I get nervous. So.
Oh, I think car trouble is like one of the biggest red flags too.
Right.
So like, yeah, I'm not going to help. It. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. Someone's going to get mad at me for saying this. I'm not helping a man with his car trouble. It's not happening. I don't care.
Phone trouble, car trouble. I'm so sorry. I'm not the one who's going to help.
I'm not doing it. Because I don't trust you, unfortunately.
I don't believe that your phone died. I don't believe that you can't figure out the car yourself. Like, do I look like I can fix your car better than you?
Right?
No, I don't.
So true. So true. The guy, he finally reaches out his hand, introducing himself now as Moses Markley. Our girlie reaches back, introducing herself as Zephyr, which is an interesting name.
With a Z?
Yes, Zephyr, Zephyr is her name.
Wow.
Which I think is pretty fun. They share a handshake that's a little longer than normal, and we even get a little suggestive shot of their hands as they pull apart. They kind of like, you know, graze their fingers along each other's as they pull apart.
Okay.
It's like, ooh, okay, a little chemistry there.
All she needed to see was a surfboard. Like, it really is that easy. It's hard out here.
Yeah. So Zephyr's like, all right, go start your car. And he successfully does. And a song immediately starts playing from his speakers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a song called Ooby Dooby by Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Okay. I thought it was going to be Baby Shark. I'm a little sad.
Oh, man. That would have been great, honestly.
Right.
I would have loved that too. Zephyr asks Moses if he's a Creedence fan. And he's like, yeah, of course. And he asks her the same question. And she's like, yeah, sure. Just not this song. And Moses is a little taken aback, asking what's wrong with Ooby Dooby. And Zephyr goes on to list other Creedence songs with deep meaning, saying that a silly song about called Ooby Dooby about a little dance can't compete with those songs.
Mm-hmm.
Moses is quick to defend the song, saying it's a metaphor about love. It's about that ooby-dooby feeling you get in your heart when you find the one and you just gotta go for it.
Okay.
It's so funny. No, like, they share, like, a sweet little moment. Like, they're looking into each other's eyes before we cut to them just absolutely going at it. Like,
okay.
Yeah. We've reached that point of the night.
We're moving along. In the car?
So they are in Zephyr's van, but it's parked in the driveway of Moses's house.
Oh, that's a choice.
It is one hell of a choice.
Yeah.
They go to his house. They're like, let's just stay in the van.
Yeah.
I should mention, this is like a van, like a, she lives in this van.
I was imagining like the Scooby-Doo van where there's like all that space in the back.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly that. It's just not perfect. The mystery machine to a T.
Right.
I wish. That would be really fun.
Yeah.
So afterward, they share a joint in the car and they're just having some fun conversation, a lot which centers around how many bread rolls Zephyr eats in a day, which is 9.
Wow.
It partly comes down to budgeting for her and the fact that she enjoys bread rolls. And Moses jokes that he does have real food inside and also running water. But Zephyr's like, no, I'm good. And she definitely gives the vibes of like, she's a very minimalistic, adventurous girl who's very independent. Okay. Like, that is her vibe.
That's cool.
She is cool. She gives, like, really cool vibes. They get to talking about surfing again, and Moses asks her what got her into surfing, and Zephyr says that there just wasn't really anything for her on land. And I immediately was like, okay, Moana, like, whatever you say.
Oh, my God. I still have never seen Moana.
What?
But I obviously, like, get the reference. You know, she's, like, a water girl.
Yeah. Honestly, I've only seen the movie once, but I love the How Far I'll Go, that song.
Oh, I think I know it, yeah.
Okay, everyone will love that.
And scene. You're welcome.
And scene, everybody. Now, the two of them fall asleep in the van, but Moses wakes up first to go inside and make breakfast for Zephyr. Now, it's still, like, dark out. It's, like, probably like 4:30 a.m. But I guess that's kind of normal for, like, people who surf, I guess, get up super early.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. First of all, I could never surf just because, like, I'm not physically capable.
Same.
But also, that is so true. Like, I watched Freakier Friday yesterday, and there's, like, one of the girls, main girls, is a surfer girl, and her and her friends are, like, meeting up to surf before school even starts, and I'm like,
oh, my God.
Catch me as a teenager waking up a minute earlier than I had to for any reason.
Not a chance. That's crazy.
Yeah.
No. So he goes inside to make breakfast for Zephyr, and he's dancing around the kitchen to Ooby Dooby. He's making a big old stack of pancakes. He's got coffee. He's got juice. It's honestly really sweet. He's like really excited about this breakfast. But when he comes back outside, the van is gone. And he looks really sad.
Okay, so I do have to retract what I said earlier. He doesn't have to die.
Yeah, he's kind of sweet.
Yeah, I thought we were going a certain direction for a second. And after I was fooled by Tucker in the beginning of the movie, I was ready to be fooled again.
So fair.
But
so fair.
I'm on his side now. Both of their sides.
Cool. We see that Zephyr, yes, she's driven away and she's driving up to the beach. And she gets ready to head out to the surf when she realizes she's missing her fin key, which is something that helps install the fins on your board. I had to do a lot of Googling for this movie for both Australian things and surfing things.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But they talk a lot about this fin key, so I was like, I might as well look it up.
Yeah.
There is another car, a truck actually, parked in the lot. And without hesitation, our girlie goes over to the truck to see if maybe that person has a fin key that she can borrow.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody around the truck, so she just starts rummaging through the stuff in the bed of the truck looking for a fin key.
Well, that fits, you know.
Yeah, it's like definitely her personality.
She's just thrifty.
Yeah, she's thrifty gifty. She yells out in case the truck owner's around that she's like, I just need to borrow it. I'll be right back. And as she's looking through the stuff, she gets jump scared by someone saying, g'day, as they emerge from the bushes.
Oh, no. It's not Tucker.
Zephyr lets out a Jesus as she jumps back in fear, and our new friend says, not quite. I'm Tucker.
Yes. No. I can't tell if this is the type of movie where, like, we have introduced Zephyr and Moses and they're going to, like, stick with us to the end, or if this is going to be, like, just dead people left and right and they just made me meet this cool girl and now they're going to kill her. Like, please no. I'll be mad.
Zephyr asks if this guy's got a spare fin key, and he digs through his stuff to find one. He even tells her that she's pretty brave surfing here all alone. And she hits him back with, "You're alone, aren't you?" And he's like, touche. Zephyr takes the fin key and says she'll bring it right back over. But Tucker's like, nah, don't worry about it. I have heaps of them. So Zephyr makes her way back over to her van to work on her board. And Tucker pulls away in his truck, giving us a little wave as he drives off. A little text message ding goes off. And Zephyr takes out her phone to see a message from Moses. It reads, "Was I really that bad?" Bro, he loses a couple points here because he goes, "Was I really that bad?" with an eggplant and shrugging emoji. Why did you gotta put the emoji? Like, we understood. Take the emoji. Like, we don't want the emoji.
Yeah, we can leave that in like friggin' 2015.
Literally.
It's not it anymore.
Zephyr just replies with, "Early bird gets the barrel," which is a surfer's take on "early bird gets the worm," because mm-hmm. I guess the barrel is like the circly wave thing.
Yes, okay.
But Zephyr's like, "All right, gotta go, time to surf." And that's when Moses asks if he can join her. And she ponders this for a moment and she types out, "I'd like that," before ultimately deleting it and sending, "It's a free ocean," instead.
Oh, that's so you.
Who would do such a thing? The three little dots pop up and Moses is ready to, he's about to reply, but a plastic bag finds itself wrapped around Zephyr's face and jump scare. Mm. We quickly come to see that it is indeed Tucker with the bag in his hands. And Zephyr is really fighting back. Like, she's strong girly, but Tucker's a large dude. This is a big man. And she just doesn't have much of a chance here to do anything. He holds the bag over her face until her body goes limp.
No.
He takes a surfboard out of the back of her van and then takes her body, zipping it up into what I think is a board bag in the bed of his truck and duct taping her mouth shut. I don't see what he does with her surfboard, but in my mind, I'm thinking he takes it out to make it look like she went out surfing and that's, you know, where she is. Like, that's because I don't see where he puts this board.
Like, he's trying to make people think, like, if they come looking, you know, she drowned.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Tucker backs out of his spot in the lot and drives off, eventually pulling back into the shipyard where his boat is. But this is Escort Check 1.
Whoa. This has gone by so fast for some reason.
I know. I felt the same way. I was like, score check one already. But then I was like, no, we've actually been here for a while.
Yeah. Interesting. Wait, so I can assume, like, it was assumed that Heather just died in the beginning. Like, we just didn't see it on camera.
You would assume that, yeah.
Yeah. So Greg, Heather, and Zephyr. For the first act, I'm going to leave this out of my decision-making going forward. But, you know, I'm not going on a... I'm not going on a shark excursion.
Fair.
And I'm not surfing. But, you know, if I lived near a beach, I would go to a beach, maybe alone.
Yeah.
So, okay, more as Zephyr. God, it just, for her, it seemed to have come down to, like, surprise and physical strength. And you just aren't ready for it. And then it just happens. And you're not strong enough. And, it's actually, this is pretty low for a first act.
It sucks because it is very much surprises and then just the physical strength of Tucker is like nobody's breaking. Like no woman, but like he's just like a big dude.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
I will go with a 37%.
Fair. I went with 43. So we're in the same kind of place here.
Okay.
So the sun is starting to rise now as Tucker rolls the board bag from the back of the truck over to the boat. On the way there, Milo, the dog, starts growling at him because, you know, dogs always know.
Yeah.
And Tucker stares this dog down before boarding the boat and maneuvering the bag around the ship. But we don't see where he's taken it yet because we're going to go back to the lot where Zephyr left her van parked. Mm. The familiar hatchback pulls into the spot next to Zephyr's van and out pops Moses. He walks over to the van and peers in the back window, of course, not seeing her. And he takes a peek at the ocean, doesn't see her out there either. So he decides to give her a call.
Mm-hmm.
The phone rings once before Moses can then hear Zephyr's phone is still inside the van because he can, of course, hear it ringing in there. We can tell he finds it strange, but we'll come back to him later. Let's check in with Zephyr.
Yeah.
She's not dead. I didn't want to tell you that, but she is not dead.
I have to say, there was a part of me that trusted you, and now the trust is broke. Because there was a part of me where I was like, I think this means she is dead. So I was like, let me just go with it.
I honestly didn't, like, try to make it seem like she was dead. It must have been the way I said it.
No, it's fun. It's fun. I would have freaking said, I would have done the same exact thing, but I would have done it on purpose. but knocked out. Oh no, is he going to be a torture guy? Okay, knocked out. Do I need to, should I keep my score?
I think your score is fine.
I agree. Okay, I'm going to keep my first Jack score. But this is exciting because I was hoping that these two would like make it to the end. So now we still have hope.
Yes, exactly. So Zephyr's left arm is handcuffed to a bed and her mouth is still taped shut. She begins to wake up for the first time since Tucker knocked her out. And understandably, the realization of her current predicament sends her into a bit of a panic as she tugs at the handcuffs trying to break them free. When she looks up, she realizes she's not alone. Across the room, in the same situation as her, is Heather, the woman from the beginning.
Oh, no. Wait, what? Why? He just kills men, and then what does he do to women? Like, why women?
Right. I thought Heather was dead, which is why I told you.
Yeah, that seemed like that's what the movie was trying to trick us into for sure.
Absolutely. I thought she was gone. I thought she was dead.
Oh, okay.
But she is here in, like, the exact same situation, and she's okay. She's just like, hi. And of course, Zephyr is immediately like asking questions, like, what's going on here? And right. Heather tells her that they're on a boat, but that's about all she knows. She doesn't know who this guy is that brought them here. She then also apologizes for the smell as we notice a bucket and some toilet paper on the floor.
Oh.
Yeah. Zephyr just starts screaming for help, but Heather tells her it's no use. She tried that already. No one's going to hear us.
Yeah.
Zephyr continues to scream for help over Heather's pleading as we get what I think is honestly a pretty neat shot because it's like a long zoom out of the exterior of the boat where like her scream just fades out as we see how much they're just like in the middle of the ocean.
No, that is cool. I hate it, but it's cool.
Tucker's just enjoying himself. He's having a nice meal somewhere else on the boat and he seems to be watching something on TV and we can't see what it is, but we can hear a woman screaming bloody murder in whatever he's watching. We know Zephyr is a take action kind of girly. So we cut back to her to see that she's looking under the blankets, the pillows, the mattress. She's looking for anything she can use to get out of here. And she tells Heather that she needs something long and thin because if she can get something like that, she can pick the lock on their cuffs.
Mm-hmm.
While she's rummaging around, she stops suddenly when she notices a name carved into the wall. This obviously holds a lot of weight in that she knows that there have been other women before her.
Right.
She asks Heather if anyone will be looking for her. And Heather's like, no. So Heather asks Zephyr the same question, which she has the same answer.
Girl, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. We're going to forget about Moses like that? Mm-hmm. You just texted him.
Mm-hmm. This is very intentionally set up because then we immediately cut back to Moses, who is driving down the road. He's listening to some sad song. I don't know if it's a Creedence song, but it's a sad song. And then he sees a tow truck. He wrote tow truck like T-O-E. Whoops.
All over this town, just a bunch of tow trucks.
So many.
You know what that means?
Sure do.
So just trying to imagine what like the average person thinks with this image now, because the image I'm seeing from T-O-E truck is wild, and I hope that we share it.
It's for me, it's just a big tow as a car.
Oh, it's not where my brain went. So my brain went to like cargo truck, like there's a big toe like painted on the side, but then it's like filled up to the brim with like actual big toes. It's like spilling out in the wind as it's driving by.
Okay. This is a homework assignment for everybody who listened to this episode. Tell us what you thought when I said tow truck.
Please.
With T-O-E truck. I need to know everybody's imaginations. But anyway, he sees a tow truck drive past him. And of course, Zephyr's van is on the back. All right, I need to calm down. Picturing a tow truck now. He obviously knows that this is strange, so he heads right to the police station and tries to explain the situation to them. Mm-hmm. But he sounds a little crazy because he doesn't know Zephyr's full name. She was a one-night stand. The cops aren't going to take this seriously. Like, she's a grown adult. Like, there's just not enough there for them to really do anything about it. So back at the boat, it's a pretty dark, intimidating night. It looks stormy without the actual storm, like the clouds are very storm-like, but there's no storm happening.
Mm-hmm.
Heather and Zephyr get to talking now, and we learn that Heather is currently on a gap year, one that her mother hadn't wanted her to take for fear of her safety, and now she wished she had listened to her.
Mm. Wait, so they are around the same age?
Zephyr's a little older. Heather says, like, she also didn't want me drifting from the plan. And Zephyr's like, what do you mean by that? And Heather goes on to say, well, law school, house on the same street. And Zephyr's like, that sounds like your mom's plan, not yours.
Right.
It's your life, and you should tell her that when you see her again.
Okay. I love that they're having, like, a therapy session right now. But I would be a terrible person in a situation. Like, I'd be like, I don't give a shit about your mom. Like, we need to get out of here.
For real. That's what I was thinking watching this. I'm like, how do you have brain capacity for this conversation? Yes. Like, that's insane.
That's funny.
We'll also learn a little bit about Zephyr's backstory through this conversation. She'd been in the foster system growing up, and she doesn't have any real family. And she also spent some time in juvie in her youth.
Okay.
And one of the things that she learned in juvie was a lot of terrible jokes. And Heather's like, oh, can you please tell me one to get my mind off this for 2 seconds? And Zephyr's like, she doesn't really want to, but she does it anyway. So she looks at Heather. She says, what do you call the useless piece of skin on a dick? And Heather doesn't respond. And Zephyr goes, the man. And this gets them both laughing for a second.
You know what? You know what? After what Tucker has done to these women, I approve this joke.
Heather leans back in her bed, and the covers that she's had, like, over her chest the whole time kind of come off the top half of her body. And a moment of realization occurs for Zephyr. Is that an underwire? She asks Heather, seeing her bikini top. Heather quickly jumps on Zephyr's train of thought and tosses over the top, and Zephyr begins to pull the wire out. She starts messing with the lock when they hear the door being messed with to the room. So Zephyr quickly goes into, like, act natural mode. Like, she puts the wire away, and Heather's sure to bring the covers up to her neck because she's not wearing a top at all now. So she doesn't want Tucker to see that. So Tucker waltzes in with a platter and first offers Heather a Vegemite sandwich and some water.
Wow.
Vegemite's an Australian thing.
I can't tell. I was going to say it's an Australian thing, but is it actually? Like, because I feel like every time I see, like, is it as common as a cup of coffee, you know? Because I swear every time I see, like, Australian media or, like, Australian characters, they always have that. And I'm like, is it really this common or is it a stereotype? I'm curious. Right. Any Australians? Let me know.
Yeah, because, like, I looked up Vegemite and it was like an Australian. So I wonder if it's, like, one of those things that, like, people throw into movies to be like, it's Australia. Right. Did you know that? We're in Australia.
Right.
That's a great point. I actually don't know. So, yeah, if we have Australian listeners, please weigh in because I do not know. So Heather takes the cup of water and goes and chugs it. But Tucker notices something strange. He begins to say, what happened to your... pointing, like, to her neck. He can tell, like, her straps are missing. But Zephyr cuts in with, hey, asshole, I'm ready for my dinner now. She's wild.
Yeah.
Tucker brings the platter over to Zephyr, who chugs the water and takes the sandwich. Tucker then sits down on the bed next to Zephyr and kind of leans into her a bit, like, in an intimidating way before going off on this little tangent, which, oh boy, does Tucker love his tangents.
Okay.
He's like, have you ever heard of the Scarlet King snake? She's a harmless creature, but quite cleverly mimics the colorful stripes of the deadly coral snake. Now, you're trying hard to be the coral snake, but we both know...
Oh, my God. I'm annoyed. I'm annoyed with this man. Please, like, do not mansplain to me who I am, what I'm doing. Like, you're a psychotic.
He's like, you're trying hard to be the coral snake, but we both know that's me. And you, well, you just have a pretty pattern. And then he, like, rubs her face with his hand and, like, licks his finger and goes, tastes like fear. And I'm like, the fuck?
I desperately need this man to be defeated by the end of this movie.
Yeah, it's very understandable. He then just, like, leaves the room with a hooroo, which I guess is also an Australian thing.
Okay.
There was a lot of Googling on my end. I'm like, is hooroo, like, what is hooroo?
I've never heard that one.
It's like a way to say goodbye in Australia, apparently. Okay. So he's very, did you know we're in Australia, Cassie?
Are we?
Yeah. In case you haven't figured that one out yet.
Yeah.
As soon as he's out the door, Zephyr tosses Heather's top back over to her so she can put it back on and gets to work with the handcuff lock. She's working on it when her vision starts to go a little blurry and you can tell that something is wrong. That's when Heather says, I don't feel so good. Before completely passing out on the bed. In her current state, Zephyr fumbles the wire and it falls to the ground. She clumsily, like, gets down on the floor looking for the wire when the door opens back up and Tucker walks back in. He comes over to Zephyr and sees what she's looking for immediately. He picks the wire up off the ground and says, "Oh, you're a fighter. I love fighters. Makes for a better show."
Who's watching?
Great question. Zephyr must have passed out eventually because she's waking up again. And this time she's handcuffed to a chair out on the open, like, back deck area of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
It's the middle of the night, so it's dark. But then some large industrial spotlights come on, illuminating the back of the boat and the water around it.
Oh.
Tucker appears cracking open a beer, and he walks over to a camera that is facing the water at the back of the boat. He peers through the viewfinder and lets out a, perfect. He then, being his weird self, goes on a little tangent, and we learn that he fishes at a few different beaches, including the one where Zephyr surfs, and he's been watching her for a while. Oh. He loves the way she comes alive on the board, similar to how he feels about what he does. It's his true calling. And this was an interesting reveal for me in the sense that I thought it was very much random.
Yes, agreed.
But I guess Zephyr was like a true target of his, because it seems like obviously Greg and Heather were more of an opportunity kill for him. But Zephyr, I guess he's been watching.
Speaking of that opening scene, wasn't there a fourth man there?
There is like a fisherman who has his boat parked next to boat.
Oh, so he wasn't like part of the experience at all. Like he wouldn't have been waiting and noticing that Tucker came back alone.
Right. Yeah. He was just, it seems like he like lives on a boat right next to where Tucker parks his boat, like in the shipyard.
Okay. But I agree. That's interesting that he's been watching. Like, is she special for some reason, or does he often target people special to him, you know?
Right. So he heads over to Heather, who's been passed out on the ground, and she's also secured in some way. It's hard to tell how at the moment. But Tucker cuts a lock of her hair before waking her up. He walks over to a control panel and presses a button. Now we see how Heather is secured. She's wearing a harness attached to a sort of crane lift. The crane is now lifting her up from the floor of the boat and moving her out toward open ocean, where Tucker stops her as she dangles a good 10 feet above the water.
Oh, no.
He then begins to lower her into the water as the music intensifies, and Heather's screaming for her life. Zephyr's screaming for him to stop, but he's just enjoying himself.
Mm-hmm.
Once Heather's lowered into the water, just enough so that her head and shoulders remain above, Tucker stops her and it gets quiet. Suddenly, a shark comes to the surface and attacks Heather. The screaming resumes as multiple sharks begin tearing away at her body. Zephyr is screaming for Tucker to pull her up, but of course, Tucker's enjoying the show.
Yeah.
He's looking through the camera's viewfinder, watching his work.
Oh, so he's the whole audience. Wow.
Right. Yeah, it's a show for him.
That's an interesting hobby.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly, the sharks get calm. And we see that Heather is still alive, but so barely. She's like shaking and her head begins to lower.
Mm-hmm.
And we can see as one of her legs floats up to the surface.
Oh.
And in the calm after the storm, Tucker says, "Tell me that isn't the greatest show on earth," as he turns the camera on Zephyr now, who is obviously very distressed. And he's sure to let her know that it'll be her time to shine tomorrow night. Back handcuffed to her bed, Zephyr begins to carve her and Heather's names into the wall now. And we're going to cut back and forth between this sad reality that Zephyr's currently experiencing and the absolute party that Tucker is throwing himself upstairs.
Okay.
He is drinking out of a bottle of wine. He's dancing around in his underwear to very loud music. And Zephyr is now realizing something that I don't think we're surprised to discover, but she, for some reason, is. There are clearly other names that were carved into this wall that have been painted over. Like, she finds multiple painted over spots. And it's kind of like, yeah, kind of figured that much.
Yeah.
Tucker is in the midst of an arts and crafts project. He's packaging the tape from tonight's show in a case and taping the lock of hair on the inside. And he labels the tape Heather.
Mm-hmm.
He heads over to a cabinet, unlocks it, and places the tape inside. And we get a classic zoom out moment to see that he has at least 39 of these tapes in his cabinet.
I don't know. This trope is always terrifying to me. Like, people...
Yes.
Who are so, I think it's the boldness of it. Like, they're so fearless in what they're doing that they're recording it in the first place. And then also the fact that you're like relive, like, I'm sure you watch it back and like you relive.
Right.
Oh my God, like, that's so creepy. It's a big trope.
And like, obviously, it's just like the unfortunate thing is like, it's also just like a reality, which is like something that I'll never be able to wrap my head around. It's like,
no,
really freaking disturbing. So he pulls out a fresh tape now, and he labels this one Zephyr.
Mm-hmm.
Morning rolls around and we get a lovely shot of Heather's head and shoulders floating out in the water about 500 yards or so away from the boat. It's a beautiful establishing shot to let us know that it's morning.
Yeah.
And Tucker brings another platter into the room in which he's holding Zephyr, and he assures her that this water's not spiked. A joke is only funny once. He encourages her to eat and drink because she's going to want her strength later on. Zephyr continues to ignore him, so Tucker's like, come on, where's that fight in you that I saw before? At this, Zephyr kicks the tray out of his hands from her bed and says, get away from me, you twisted fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Tucker's going to go on another one of his spiels because that's what he loves to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to talk about sharks and he's like hinting at the fact that he is the shark in the ecosystem and blah, 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 blah.
Oh my God. This man is so sad. I mean, obviously, for obvious reasons, but then it just somehow just keeps getting worse.
Yeah. So Zephyr's truly had enough, much like you at this point. And she says, I wrote her full little thing here. She says, give me a fucking break. Mm-hmm. I've never met anyone who likes the sound of their voice so much.
Mm-hmm.
Don't compare yourself to the shark. They're highly evolved. You're just a pathetic coward who kills women because mommy never loved you or whatever. Mm-hmm. You are the lowest of the low. A worm. Even lower than a worm. You are the toxic fucking trash that floats in the ocean.
Tell him.
And I was just like, oh.
Yes.
Beautiful, girly. That was so good. I loved it.
This is one of those moments where sometimes you can cringe in movies when victims do this because you're like, mm-hmm. oh my God, like you do not have the upper hand right now. Like, please, mm-hmm. please don't do this. I don't want you to die because you piss them off.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't give a fuck. He needs to hear these words.
Exactly. And I could talk about this at any point and I might as well bring it up now.
Mm-hmm.
Both the actor and the actress for Tucker and for Zephyr, insane. Like, they're so good, so believable, and they're just both
that's cool
really like strong, like their personalities come through so strongly, and like I just like, oh, I just love the way that they play these characters. They're really well done.
Yeah.
So Tucker isn't gonna show it, but like this definitely stung him a little bit.
And
he just diverts attention to the fact that she hasn't used the facilities yet, gesturing to the bucket on the floor. He heads out of the room and Zephyr looks at the bucket with like this aha moment. And she grabs the plastic bucket and tears the handle off. She then breaks the handle in half, leaving herself with a small plastic pointy spear.
Okay.
So upstairs, Tucker's eating some fish. And yes, he is watching back Heather's tape on his TV. He then cooks up a little something. He crushes up some mysterious pills in a bowl, adds some liquid. I don't know if it's water. And he just fills up a syringe with whatever we've got going on here. He heads back to Zephyr's room where she's fast asleep. Well, no, of course not. And as Tucker leans over her, ready to insert the syringe into her neck, her eyes shoot open and she instead inserts her plastic spear into his. Tucker falls back, clutching at his neck, and during his fall, he hits his head on the other bed frame and knocks himself out.
Okay.
So this gives Zephyr the chance to reach for the keys on his belt and free herself from the handcuffs.
Amazing.
Once she's free, she decides to go for his knife on his belt as well. But as she reaches for it, Tucker shoots up and grabs her wrist.
Oh.
Zephyr is able to quickly pull away and run out of the room, and she tries shutting the door behind her and locking Tucker in there, but she's not quite quick enough. So she makes a run for it up a set of stairs, but Tucker grabs her leg and inserts the contents of the syringe into her cap.
Mm-hmm.
Zephyr gives him a quick kick to the face, and he falls back, allowing her to make another run for it. She makes it to the control room. I don't know what you call that. Like where all the stuff is in a ship.
Right. Yep. I know what you mean.
And she grabs for the radio and just starts immediately being like, is anybody out there? I need help.
Yep.
But she's only met with distorted kind of maybe voices and static. Oh. Doesn't seem like there's much going on there. She looks out the window and she sees that there's another boat in view. It's still quite far off, but it is something.
Mm-hmm.
And this is clearly like a booze cruise or something because this boat's all like lit up with fun lights. The music is booming. So this doesn't stop her from making her way to the edge of the boat. Like, she's waving her arms, screaming for help. But there's no chance anyone's going to see or hear her. But I don't blame her for trying.
Yeah.
Suddenly, Tucker pops his head out of a doorway to the side of the boat and is like, well, at least someone's having a good time, eh? He walks towards Zephyr, who is slowly backing away now. And we reach the back of the boat, you know, like where Tucker puts on his show. And Zephyr picks up his camera, like with the tripod, to like use it as a defense weapon. And this strikes a nerve with Tucker. He's like, you better put that down.
Oh, I'd be, well, I want to throw it overboard because I really am so mad at him that I want to piss him off. But also, mm-hmm. It is still, there is still that element of like, okay, if I enrage him enough, he's going to like,
right,
be able to like have the power to overpower me in a second.
Right. And it's interesting you say that because he says, you better put that down now or you won't even make it to the hook. Saying that, yes, I will kill you right now.
Right.
If you do not put that down. But Zephyr is Zephyr. And she says, fuck it. And she throws that camera overboard.
Before,
yeah. You know Zephyr.
You know what? I'm happy it's her. Because if that was me and I threw it overboard, like, that would be the end of my story. Like, I would accept death. Like, I would not be getting out of here. But I have faith in her. She can do this.
Right. So she throws it overboard. And then she throws herself overboard as well.
Oh,
not 100% sure what her plan is here,
right,
to be honest.
Oh my God, because that's so dangerous.
She just starts swimming away. But unfortunately, I remember Tucker did get that syringe in her leg. So she starts pass out. Tucker grabs her with a large hook and brings her back to the boat. Score check 2.
Oh. Well, the thing is, he doesn't want... Okay, well, Heather, yeah. Heather's screwed, you know.
Right. What are you going to do?
But the only reason she's alive at this point, it feels like, is because he's allowing her to be.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if he wanted to, he could, but he's enjoying playing with her.
For sure.
Where the hell is Moses? I mean, not that I expect him to just, you know, suddenly be on the deck of this boat somehow, but...
But maybe.
But, like, I wonder what he's up to. It's been a minute. Honestly, I think I'm going to stick with my exact same score from the first one. From the first act, I'm going to go 37 again because Heather again died in a way that I found to be impossible to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Same as I thought happened in the first, but then it really did happen here.
Yep.
And then as far as Zephyr goes, my 37% is just from me hopefully still being alive. And unfortunately, I think I would just go along with everything though.
Yeah.
Like, I'm worried about my third act because I feel like she's going to pull off something really like amazing that I would never be able to do. But as far as now, right now, short term.
Yeah.
I might be okay because I would not be as brave as her. And fair. I'd probably just be waiting to be toyed with and be the next show at this point.
No, that's fair. It's because I don't write my scores in until we're sitting here so that I can kind of go through it with you and like see like how our conversations pan out. But
yeah,
I was kind of sitting here like stuck about like, am I right around the same spot? Because
yeah,
it's like you're a 0% with Heather, but then you're not quite 100 with Zephyr just because of like her personality and who she is and just kind of all the chance. So I'll stick with mine as well.
Okay,
because
cool.
I think it is kind of like tricky. Like, yes, she's still alive. But how likely is it that you would be able to pull off what she's pulling off right now?
Right. Well, the thing is, too, honestly, why I'm so low, because I think someone could argue like, well, it could be higher because if you're going off of Zephyr at the end of the day, like you're alive right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes down to the personality thing for me where I think Heather went first because he's anticipating and having more fun with Zephyr because of her personality.
True.
So he's keeping her alive longer to like see her fight and have fun with that. And I would not be a fighter in the situation. I'd be a crybaby and he would get rid of me first. So that's why I'm like lower down.
That's actually a really good point. Yeah. I think you're entirely correct about that. I didn't even think about it from that angle, but that makes sense. So you were wondering about Moses. Luckily, we're going to go back and check in with him now.
Perf.
He is standing on the beach where, okay, so there does appear to be some sort of search occurring on the shore, but I don't know how we got here. I don't know if they're looking for Zephyr or somebody else because we do hear like a radio that says like they're looking for a blonde female, which Zephyr is.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know how we got there, but like, it's really not that important. At this time.
I know. I do. Those thoughts cross my mind, though. Like, I'm not the easiest person to suspend disbelief in a movie, but then I'm like, okay, just let it. It's okay, Cassie. Like, just go with it.
It's like, I don't know what's going on. But yeah.
We're here.
Moses looks out at the waves, and he suddenly has an idea. He goes back to his car, and he's looking at an app on his phone called Wave Watch. We quickly realize that this is an app that has camera views of the ocean in different places, presumably so surfers can see what the waves are looking like on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Moses finds the camera feed for the beach that they're at and scrubs through it. And luckily, this app allows you to look at previous days. So he scrubs through till he finds the night that Zephyr went missing. He learns that Zephyr's van drove by, followed by a truck. And then Zephyr's van never returned, but that truck does.
Mm-hmm.
So now Moses is zooming in on the truck, and it has a logo on the side for Tucker's Shark Experiences. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty valuable information. We'll come back to Moses, but for now, Tucker's boat is actually pulling up again at the shipyard.
Oh.
And Zephyr's handcuffed to the bed again, both arms and a leg this time with tape over her mouth. So okay. She's trying to scream for help when she begins to hear like voices and like the horn. Like she can tell they're pulling up to the dock, but
yeah,
she's got the tape on her mouth, so it's really not doing much.
Yeah.
And that fisherman guy is in his usual spot, and he's all excited to see Tucker. He thought he wouldn't be back for a full week, and Tucker like just doesn't have time for pleasantries right now. He's like all business, and he says he ran out of some supplies. He needs to grab some stuff, and he hops in his truck and speeds off. We can see that Moses is following his lead because he has looked up Tucker's website, and he finds the phone number, gives the number a call, goes straight to voicemail, and you can kind of tell at this time, it doesn't seem like he's like suspicious because he's like, hi, I don't really know what I'm calling for, but like, give me a call back. Like, mm-hmm. I just need to talk to you. But he does notice that there's an address on the site too. So he's like, all right, I'll just go there and see if I can find anything out. Tucker, meanwhile, is having a panic attack in a thrift store as he desperately tries to find a replacement camera for tonight's show.
Right.
Lucky for him, he does find one, but Moses is going to make it back to the shipyard before he does. So Moses parks his car, gets out, waltzes down the dock straight up to the boat, and bangs on the door.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like no one's here, so he starts to walk away, but then he hears something. He puts his head to the floor, and through it, he can hear banging and some muffled cries.
Okay, yep.
He immediately jumps into action, breaking one of the windows on the boat with a hook and jumping inside. We can see that Tucker is now pulling up back into the shipyard. So, like, it's very much like a tension building kind of moment where you're like, oh, no, go, go, go.
Yeah, I'm stressed.
So Moses is following the sounds of the cries through this maze of a boat, and he eventually comes directly upon the door to the room where Zephyr is being held, and he just is able to just open it right up. He opens it up and Zephyr sees him and she's just like, holy shit. And mm-hmm. he runs right over to her, takes the tape off her mouth. And Zephyr, like being the girly she is immediately, she's just like, all right, quick, find something I can pick the lock with, call the cops.
Yes.
Like there's no time to just chat. Like just we need to
go.
So Moses doesn't ask any questions. He whips out his phone.
He dials thank you.
He dials 000 as he runs up the stairs and search for something to free Zephyr. We hear the operator answer, but just as they do, Tucker comes flying at Moses, knocking him to the ground. A scuffle ensues, but Tucker is simply so much stronger than Moses. So Moses is kind of not doing the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to note that the operator hears so much of the scuffle and Moses is screaming for help before Tucker grabs it and hangs it up. So like they heard a lot.
Okay.
So more scuffle. And now by some miracle, don't ask me how, Moses gets Tucker pinned to the ground with mm-hmm. like the bar of the hook that he had pressed against Tucker's throat. And
okay.
it really seems like he's getting somewhere. Because, like, Tucker's starting to, like, lose breath.
Yeah.
But then a bar comes and whacks Moses in the back of the head.
What?
It's the fisherman.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I can't say I'm surprised.
Well.
But I'm a little surprised.
Moses is passed out. And Tucker's slowly but surely getting up off the floor. And the fisherman hears Zephyr calling for help downstairs. And this, and I wrote, and this poor guy is confused as fuck.
Oh.
So he turns around to ask Tucker, like, what's going on? But as soon as he does, Tucker swings a hook into the top of his head and he falls dead to the ground.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I doubted this man in his final moments of life.
I know. He was just trying to help his friend.
You know what? No, when you reframe it and look at it, like, yes, of course, he's going to, you walk into this situation, you see this guy, like, trying to kill this other guy. Yes, you're going to try. Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun. That's fun. I like that. Just, like, from a plot standpoint. Like, bringing him back, and then he's just an innocent guy, like, trying to help, but then immediately, and then you're excited, and then he's dead all of a sudden. It's like whiplash.
And he was also definitely, not that they went super heavy on it, but he was definitely a comedic relief character.
Oh, yeah.
Like, even in his death, like, the hook goes to the top of his head, and he lets out a fuck tuck, and he falls around dead. Like, it's like he's very much that guy in this movie.
Yeah.
But he's gone now. So sad. The poor little pupper's also here, barking its head off. And Tuck just starts barking back at it, because of course he does. And the dog runs away, luckily. So that's good. Dog didn't die.
Yeah, I can't lie. Of course, when you first mentioned the dog, I was
yeah
a little nervous. Because whenever I mention dogs in movies, it doesn't usually end well.
Exactly. Why do they gotta do it? It's like,
I know.
It's unnecessary. So Moses is still passed out and Zephyr is still restrained, but Tuck is stressed. He wants to get this boat out of here as quickly as possible, but he's low on gas and he's like really freaking out. But he's like, looks at his map. He locates a nearby spot that should be secluded enough for what he needs. And off we go to this spot.
Mm-hmm.
Down in this little prison cell of a room, Moses is now chained to the bed that Heather used to be chained to.
Mm-hmm.
And Zephyr and Moses are going to catch, you know, they're going to catch up for a minute. They're going to be a little cute for a minute.
Yeah. So what's been up with you? Anything?
I knew it. Moses is like, oh, man, I fucked up the rescue. And Zephyr is like, well, you almost stuck it. And she's honestly just so appreciative of the fact that he showed up at all.
Yeah, I would be too.
Exactly.
And he handled it well. He did everything that he could.
Yes, he really did. And he was very proactive in ways that usually characters in these movies aren't.
Oh, my God. Yeah, they're like, wait, what's going on? How did that?
Yeah.
Is now the time to ask? No.
Let's go. Gotta move on. So they actually get into why she left that morning. And she claims that she's just better off alone. But Moses is not buying it.
Mm-hmm.
She tells him that he doesn't know her at all. Because he's like, oh, I know you. I know you. And she's like, you don't know me. But then he goes off on a little spiel about why that's not true. I know you. I know you dig Credence. I know you're in the Guinness Book of World Records for the most bread rolls consumed in one day. I know you're tough and I know you're really warm and funny. And I sense that you haven't had as much kindness in your life as you deserve. That's why you ran. Because it's hard to trust when all you know is why you shouldn't. And you can tell how true all of this is by how uncomfortable Zephyr gets from it. Like just that look on her face. And it's at this time that Tucker has to come in. Well, she'll ruin the moment. He's got his harness, and Zephyr immediately sits off. He's like, no, you can't. But Tuck's decided to add a matinee, he says. So everything is set up again. Zephyr is trapped in her chair, and Moses is in the harness. They both see the fisherman's mutilated and dead body on the floor, and we're like, what the fuck? Who is this guy? And Zephyr starts screaming at Tuck that killing Moses is a really stupid idea because he's a rich local and people will actually be looking for him. But he's not listening. He's at the control panel, lifting Moses and positioning him over the ocean. Zephyr and Moses are both screaming now as two sharks appear below Moses as Tucker begins to lower him into the water. Zephyr just screams, wait. And for some reason, Tucker listens this time. He pauses the machinery and Zephyr offers herself up instead, saying that Moses doesn't deserve this. Tucker's like, aw, how romantic. Too bad I'm more of a horror fan, which is such a stupidly annoying good line to me.
I agree. I want to cringe at it, but it's kind of fun. I've not heard that line before, and it works.
it's just so me too. I'm like, oh my god. This is one moment where I'm like, okay, I kind of get you for a hot second here. Kind of on the same wavelength.
Oh no, that's terrifying, but yes.
So he goes, he smacks that button to lower Moses some more, and Moses continues to writhe and scream as he's lowered into the water. Understandably, but Zephyr tells him to stop moving and be as still as he possibly can.
Oh,
so he does.
Oh,
he's actually able to listen. I don't know if I could do it.
No, I absolutely wouldn't.
No, there's sharks underneath. I'm not gonna be able to chill out. I'm sorry. Tucker whips out his new camera and starts filming. Moses stays. Oh my god, that's so many S's.
Yeah.
Moses stays still. So.
Oh. No, yeah, no, that's valid. That's hard.
Moses stays. Exactly. Moses stays still, so the sharks actually swim away.
Yes.
That's what I was trying to say.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Sharks are friends.
Right. Friendly shark. Tucker looks disappointed as he brings Moses back to the boat. But as soon as he's in reach, he just stabs Moses a few times and says, well, that ought to ring the dinner bell. And he sends him back out with his fresh bloody wounds.
Oh, man.
So Moses is definitely feeling the blood loss as he's lowered into the water.
Yeah.
And the sharks are already making their way back. But suddenly Tucker stops lowering him in. He looks up and sees a helicopter is nearby.
It's
a little too close for comfort. So it's time for, as Tucker puts it, a a brief intermission. He puts Moses and Zephyr back in their little prison cells for the time being and waits for the copter to move along. Zephyr really is a fighter, as she's down here really trying to break free of her cuffs still.
Mm-hmm.
This time she's trying to like just slip her hand through the cuff, mm-hmm. which is clearly not going to work. She's like cutting her hand to bits.
Yeah.
And Moses has lost a lot of blood, so he's unconscious in the bed next to her. Like still definitely alive, but unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
She looks up at him and doesn't say anything, but there's like this message conveyed, like just in a few shots in the look on her face. It's just like well done, where like you can see on her face, she's like, he risked his life for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for me to do the same for him. Like, oh. There's no words, but, like, I don't know. It's just conveyed so well. Just,
that's
I don't know.
Cool.
I really liked it. She uses her free hand to grab the thumb of her cuffed hand.
I was going to ask if it was going to, like, I didn't know if it was going to go this way, but I was going to ask you, like, would you break your hand, like, or your finger for this? Like, do you think you could?
So this is one of those situations where I'm, like, in the moment right
it's
now
hard
sitting here.
To know.
No.
Yeah.
But if I'm about to die, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I can't put myself in that position. Mm-hmm. So I want to say no. I don't think I could do it. But if I'm that desperate, maybe I could. I physically don't know how I would be able to force my hand to do it. Because like they say, like we've talked about this, your brain stops you from hurting yourself.
Exactly.
So it's like, it takes a lot of mental strength.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I don't know if I have it either.
So she begins to pull her thumb back, sorry everybody, until it breaks. And this should allow for her hand to slip through the cuffs now.
Mm-hmm.
But just then Tucker comes back into the room.
Oh,
so
no.
Zephyr hides her hand like behind her back and she puts on a brave face because this girl just broke her thumb and now she's like gotta be chill about it.
Crazy.
Tucker comes in with his tray of food and water as usual and looks to Moses. Guess he's probably not hungry, he says. He continues, if it's any consolation, you guys weren't right for each other. He's soft and gooey, and you're hard. Your heart is nails, like me.
Okay, well, ew, do not compare me to you. Mm-hmm. And also, have you not heard opposites attract? Like, it's a pretty common thing that everyone is talking about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you even trying to get at?
Zephyr is sure to correct him immediately, saying she's absolutely nothing like Tucker. But he goes back in with his shark metaphors again, saying that's what the two of them are, solitary creatures that fend for themselves. Before he leaves the room, he says that he feels that tonight's show is really going to be one for the ages. Once he's gone, Zephyr's able to breathe again because remember, like, she's hiding that broken thumb and she's struggling. And she gets to work on slipping her hand through the cuffs, which should be easier now that she can manipulate her thumb however necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's not going to fit.
What? She did it for no reason?
Yeah. She looks up at Moses.
I would give up. That would be the moment I think I would give up. Like, I just broke my... I had the mental strength to successfully do this, and then it still is not working.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my, like, mental strength, I 100% know, it would be gone.
Yeah, I'm going to say I'm with you on this as we continue into the next bit. So she looks up again at Moses and says... It's probably a good thing you can't see this. She takes her broken thumb to her mouth.
What?
And begins to bite it off at the base.
No. No.
Yes.
No. No.
Like, I know I couldn't do that.
I
like,
know for certain. Like, breaking it, maybe if I'm desperate. I don't think, no, I could not bite it off.
Literally. Yeah, she, like, bites off the thumb and then, like, kind of the base of her hand so that would get rid of all of that bone.
Ah.
She's going out. Like, we don't, like, see it, like, it, but we see it, you know what I mean?
Enough, yeah.
Yeah, we see enough to know what's going on. So Tucker's upstairs singing Baby Shark to himself.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah, of course he is. He makes his way back down. He opens the door and sees, or he thinks he... Zephyr's not dead, but he's got to go over and check. So he walks over, throwing the covers back to be sure. But all that he sees is Zephyr's bit off thumb on the pillow. Zephyr uses this time to sneak out from her spot behind the door,
mm-hmm.
run into the hall, and slams the door behind her, leaving Tucker trapped in the room with Moses. Zephyr runs up to the control room and starts up the ship, but it seems Tucker knows another way out of this room because he just whips out a wrench and goes like at this panel.
Oh.
Like, on one of the walls. And we don't see how, but like, he does get out of this room very quickly.
Annoying.
So it's like, Yeah, very annoying. And he runs directly to shut off the power of the ship, shuts everything down. And Zephyr's like, well, fuck, like this kind of sucks. But then she notices some lights in the distance. So she scrambles to find a box on the wall that contains a couple of flares. I don't know if she knew they were there, but she seems to know pretty well. So she snags one and she begins like visioning with it. But she doesn't realize that Tucker is snuck into the room behind her.
Right.
A small footstep alerts her to his presence and she turns with a gasp and he takes a step toward her, but she fires the flare at him in return and makes a run for it.
Mm-hmm.
She tries to make her way up a ladder in the ceiling above the counter, but gets caught on something, which gives Tucker the opportunity to grab her. And this shot is probably like one of the hardest like moments of wincing that I've ever experienced. Oh. Because what they do, and I don't think I'll be able to explain it well enough, but like she's like through a hole in the ceiling above a counter. He pulls at her leg and she slips through and just like the top half of her body slams into the counter like so hard before she falls to the ground.
Ow.
Like it's just like imagine like falling and just hits like your head and your chest like on this counter. It's I don't know how they successfully make this look so bad, but
a very niche fear of something like that. It's this, so this is weird, but do you ever get like I guess I don't know if it's considered an impulsive or intrusive thought. I get them mixed up, but
same.
Where you know how when you put your hair up, sometimes you like flip your head down. I always like get this thought when I'm about to do it. Like I'm very, very conscious of where I am and what's around me of like a count, like a hard counter being there. And then me like full force, like expecting there to be nothing there and then hitting my head on a counter. I don't know why that thought like occurs to me so often, but it's one of those weird things that I always think about. And so like, This I understand the wincing of this because just like full force, like I don't know. It's a weird thing. You'd expect to see it more in horror, like well done.
Right.
But I know because like I can imagine wincing at something like that.
Yeah, no. If you saw this, like just based on you saying that, you would hate this like one little moment.
Yeah.
It's like a subtle thing that shouldn't affect me so much, but like, oh, I was like, oh my God, that looked like it hurt so bad.
Yeah.
Zephyr is somehow able to, like, there's scuffling in the dark, and Zephyr is able to stab him through the hand and also whack him with a frying pan to get away now. And in this, as you can see, we're in another cat and mouse moment.
Yes.
And Zephyr jumps overboard and starts to swim away, and she's trying to swim towards those lights that she saw before, which turn out to be a small island. And it seems like a vacation spot of sorts with, like, these pretty string lights and fancy beachside chairs. And long story short, Tucker gets in his small boat and chases her down, resulting in like a scuffle right on the edge of the shore before he eventually knocks her out and brings her back to the boat. And it does suck because like she's so close here because like you can hear people. Like you can hear them. There's like a party going on like right there. So back at the ship, we've had an unsurprising reversal of roles now. Moses is strapped into the chair while Zephyr is in the harness dangling above the water.
Sure.
It's time for more metaphors with
Tom. Oh, my goodness.
Now, can either of you tell me why the marlin is the sports fisherman's fish of choice? It's not because of her size or her beauty. It's because of her fight. See, every fisherman loves a good fight. And you'll get a marlin, and you'll bring her right in, and you'll think you've got her, and then she makes another run for it, and it's fucking exhilarating, man. But the thing the fish doesn't realize is that once that hook sets, no matter how hard she runs, she's already in the boat. And the game's rigged because it's life and death for the fish, but for the fishermen, it's just an afternoon of good old-fashioned fun. Fun can't last forever, though, can it? No. Sooner or later, the marlin must meet her fate. And it's obvious what he's doing.
Right.
Zephyr's a marlin. He's the fisherman, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing we know, the largest shark we've seen yet swims up to the boat. And, oh, Tucker is delighted. He's going to get his show for the ages tonight.
Right.
He yells action as he begins to lower Zephyr into the water. Zephyr's trying to give herself a pep talk, like, be calm, be calm. She's telling herself as Tucker pulls out the camera. Now, a different shark comes swimming up, and Tucker's like, oh, no, 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 no. I want the big one for this. So he grabs a pole and pokes at the smaller shark, and I was like, nah, this is not your night. But the shark pulls this pole from Tucker's grasp and into the water, and it falls right next to Zephyr, who's able to grab it. She holds it out like in case a shark comes, maybe she could use it as a weapon. But then everything goes quiet. Tucker's like, hey, shark, where are you? I know you're out there. Otherwise, the other one wouldn't have left. And during this moment of calm, Zephyr manages to take her pole hook thingy and she like attaches it to the clasp above her head. And this somehow makes it easier for her to climb up a little bit. Like she's able to climb up the rope a little. Tucker is watching this, but he's more amused than worried. He's just like, he's enjoying his show.
Of course.
He's filming her and he's like, you just won't quit, Marlin. The shark makes its way back over and Zephyr holds on for dear life. I can't explain this next part. I can explain it, but I can't explain it, you know? Tucker looks at her and goes, boo. And she falls into the water. I do not know why this works, but it does. It like, I don't get it. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay.
But it works. I don't know if I have to be missing something.
I need to watch this movie.
No, you really do. Honestly, it's really, I really like it.
It sounds like a good movie, especially, I mean, when there's good performances, that just is like, that's all I need when it comes to horror, if I'm being honest.
So Zephyr falls into the water. But during her fall, lucky for her, the rope that was like holding her breaks. So she's free from the crane now.
Okay.
So she swims deep into the water. And when she gets maybe about 20 feet deep or so, she stops and stares out into this dark ocean. The music builds as we see the shark swimming slowly toward her from a bit of ways. And he swims toward her. He swims toward her until they are practically face to face. But the music softens and the shark swims on by. Tucker stares out over the edge of the boat looking for his Marlin. And Zephyr manages to sneak back onto the boat from the other side. And she finds a handy dandy harpoon. Now, harpoon was the word I was looking for during the monkey when I was like, remember, like, you know, the thing with like a rope attached to the like arrow and...
Yes. Oh my God. I didn't know that's what that was called. Okay.
I only knew because in the captions it was like harpoon noise or whatever. And I was like, oh, that's what it is. Okay. So she finds a harpoon and she quietly makes her way back over to Tucker, who's like right on the edge of the boat, like looking out to the water. Tucker hears her, but it's too late. He turns around as Zephyr says, Zephyr goes, ooby dooby, motherfucker.
Oh, oh,
why do I always got to do this line? Like, every movie has this one line where you're like, okay.
Get it.
Ooby-dooby, motherfucker. I kind of want to use that, though. I'll be playing, like, Last of Us, and I'll just be like, ooby-dooby, motherfucker.
No, please do that, like, before this episode comes out and just confuse everybody.
Oh, my God. That's such a good idea. It'll be a nice little Easter egg. So she lets out her ooby-dooby, motherfucker, and fires the harpoon into his chest, sending him falling backward off the boat. He swims back around and, like, tries to get back on the boat. This is a very calm moment. It's really strange how calm everything is here. He tries to, like, get up back on the boat, but, like, an unseen force in the water pulls him away.
Ooh.
And it doesn't stay hidden for too long. The large shark comes diving to the surface, taking Tucker in its mouth before diving back down underneath.
This is exactly what I was hoping would happen. This is amazing.
You needed this.
Yeah.
You needed this today. Tucker's body pops up one last time in view of the camera this time, like his camera, like capturing his shot.
Oh, nice.
Before he's dragged back underneath. And the shark slowly and calmly swims away. But, oh, Zephyr girly, you are still holding that harpoon. And it's going to wrap itself around her ankle and pull her into the ocean.
Right. Okay.
There's a long, like a long ass beat here where things are just calm as Moses is like, Seth, and gets no response. And he like slowly slumps over and goes unconscious. And it's just like for a hot minute, you're like, nah.
Yeah.
Nah. And it is a nah. But like they hold that note for too long.
Okay.
But then we cut to a shot of open ocean with that party boat in the background again. And that music's bumping. And Zephyr pops her head back up out of the water. And luckily we realize that she did not get dragged too far from the boat. So she just swims on back over.
Okay.
And when she gets back, she tries to wake Moses up, but he won't budge.
Oh.
She runs and grabs the second flare from that box before and stands on top of the ship. She lights it and starts screaming for help, hoping the party boat might see her now. Far in the distance, we can see it change course and the horn blares.
Okay.
Once she confirms now that help is coming, she goes back to Moses. He is really out, but it doesn't stop her from talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I want to tell you something. When I said there's nothing for me on land, there's you, okay? Please wake up. his eyes drift open slowly and he's like, I knew it. And Zephyr laughs and Ooby Dooby begins to play and the movie ends.
Oh, those crazy kids.
Damn crazy kids.
Oh, that was like a perfect, this movie's like a perfect mesh of like modern but classic horror, like put into one. I don't know. It had a good balance.
Yeah, I would say it's also very much like it's one of those horror movies that you could label as not horror. Like it could just be more of thriller action. But I think, I mean, who cares about labels for genres?
Yeah.
But it's definitely one of those ones where I'm like, I wouldn't, my first thought would not be horror watching this movie.
Interesting.
But it works in that genre as
yeah, well. Yeah, absolutely. Final survivability. For the final act, I'm going to give myself a 5%.
Valid.
Yeah.
Because yeah. You literally got to bite your hand off.
Right.
And like.
Ain't no way.
Ain't I don't think no it's possible. Way. I'll leave a little more room. I'll go 7.
Okay.
Just because, I don't know. I feel like there's got to be a little bit.
Right.
Like there's a little something that could go right for me, but it's unlikely.
Yeah.
It's just like, because Zephyr's such a badass. Like,
exactly.
Badass 101. She's so cool. I have a girl crush on her.
Yeah.
She's amazing. Like, no, like anybody who watches this movie, like you have to love Zephyr. She's like so awesome. And again, Tucker is a big ass man who very strong. And yeah, I feel like most people are not making it out of this one.
No, definitely not. My weighted average comes out to 21. I'm trying to decide if that feels right to me. I mean, because I obviously, when you look at it overall, like I'm not going on the shark experience and that helps me a bit. But then, you know, if you're Zephyr at the end of the day, I think I'm going to lower it a little bit. I'll just lower it at 5 and I'll go down to 16%.
16?
Yeah, I want to be under 20.
My weighted came out to 25, which also feels way too high. I like to think like a whole quarter. Nah.
Yeah.
I'm not surviving a whole quarter. You went 16?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, like, I want to go 17. Like, that's just, like, what feels right to me.
Do it.
So, 16, 17, it's 17.
17%. Even that feels generous, but it's just one of those movies where, like, there is a lot of opportunity for different things to happen.
Yes.
And it's, like, there's a lot of opportunity to like maybe luckily stumble into a situation where, okay, you do come out on top, but it's just all luck. Like a lot of this stuff that she does, I wouldn't have been able to pull off. So.
Right. Same. Like, like if this was a yes or no, like it's very much like, yeah,
it's no.
No. Yeah. If you say you're surviving this movie, I just want to chat like about your workout routine and about your confidence.
Yeah.
And like all of those things because damn. And I also like am curious to hear from people who have watched this movie on Discord because like I personally like I love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really cool and it's not even like something that I would feel like I would normally love. But I think what draws me in is Zephyr and Tucker and the complexities of their characters, I think, are so, so fun to watch play out. And they're like the chemistry they have as like a protagonist antagonist is like just so interesting and so good. And it's also a very satisfying movie
right.
at the end of the day, which always helps out.
It's interesting because sometimes with horror, like I do, I think I've probably said this before, where I kind of like a sad ending or like where the antagonists lose. Like sometimes I like that, but this was one where I would have been genuinely pissed off if that happened.
Yeah.
But it's because they just like made Tucker so diabolical that like there's just no rooting for that man.
Right.
Dangerous Animals being the title as well.
Yes.
It's just interesting because like he constantly is comparing himself to a freaking animal, which like at the end of the day, you know, humans are, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just perfect that he, this like, calling himself a top predator, top of the food chain mentality, gets taken down by one of his own sharks that he's been feeding everyone else to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's almost something a little nope about it where it's like he thought he knew the animals, but he didn't. And that's why he like failed.
I didn't think about it until after, but like the title being Dangerous Animals is just it's obviously like a very clever on the nose title of it's the sharks, right? Well, no, it's the humans.
Yes,
at the end of the day. But he also had a whole one of his spiels that I left out because this man just went on so many spiels throughout this film, was about like the food chain very specifically and talking about how humans are afraid of sharks, but not mosquitoes, even though mosquitoes actually kill more people because people trust their guts and not their brains. And like, he just has this whole thing that kind of feeds into that whole thing as well. But
yeah,
I don't know. I really appreciate this movie a lot.
Yeah.
The ratings are like okay on it. Like 86 on Rotten Tomatoes is pretty good. 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. This is a movie where I don't want to read the bad reviews because you know, like when you really like something and then you read like a
don't
really,
ruin it for me.
a really like a bad review that totally has great points.
Right.
Nothing makes me more upset than reading a bad review that makes such good points. I'm like, no, shut up.
Yeah. Let me be in my bubble.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode this week. You can check us out over on our Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. And over there, we also have a link to our Discord where you can submit your scores and let us know. Would you survive?